From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fourth day of October 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with the chief economist at the United States Department of Agriculture about USDA's ethanol announcement, along with EPA earlier in the day. We'll discuss the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz. He's out of Atchison, Kansas, and Eric Snodgrass will be here to take a look at the weather forecast. And if you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of Commodity Week recorded yesterday afternoon as well on this Friday afternoon edition of the Ag Programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, December corn today finished 4 cents lower at $3.84¾. The March at $3.97 down 3¾. May 3½ lower at $4.02½, and July at $4.05¾, 2¾ lower. December contract down 1¼ at $4.04¼. November beans 4½ lower at $9.16¼. January at $9.30¼, up 4¼. Actually, that November contract, of course, up 4½ cents. The March up 4¼ as well at $9.40¾, and the May contract 3¾ higher at $9.50. Next year's November up a penny and three quarters, $9.62¾ the settlement price. Bean oil down a penny, and the bean meal for the day 80 cents higher. December wheat futures soft red. July contract 5.07, ¾ cents higher. Live cattle up 55 cents. Feeder cattle down 37½, and lean hogs 2½ cents lower for the day. Crude oil up about 22 cents. Ethanol 3½ cents lower. Heating oil a penny and a half higher. That's diesel fuel. And gasoline on the wholesale price up a penny and 2 cents at $1.56¼. The Dow up 271 points. The dollar down 0.045. And the gold futures 80 cents lower at $1,506.30. On the line with us now to take a look at these numbers and what they might mean to the marketplace is Mike Zuzlo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Happy Friday, sir.
Happy Friday to you as well. So we'll talk about this ethanol announcement just a bit here on the program, but I want to know how the marketplace took it this morning.
Well, I think it continued the near-term trend of giving the trade the mindset to continue to buy beans and sell corn. And for the week, if you would take out Monday's stocks report and look at the trade after Tuesday, it was all about the soybeans as far as upside, and wheat actually worked against the corn, D-sweet only being going up about 3½ cents on the week. Corn stayed up 13½ cents, but almost all of that was given to the market on that grain stocks reaction. Beans up 33 cents, and most of that made from Wednesday forward. So I think the center stage was, and the pivot in the market was midweek for a variety of reasons. Grain stocks report got traded. Plains weather came in. That was more about soybeans, canola, spring wheat. And then the harvest weather started to get talked about because the trade was disappointed with the earlier forecasts for hot, dry type mindset. And then it actually went back cold and wet as we got in the later part of the week. So the overall supply tightening narrative stayed intact after the grain stocks report, Todd. But between the weekly export sales of 76 million bushels for beans and so-so for corn, and then this harvest weather soybean yield mindset and continued issues in Brazil, it was more about beans on the second part of the week. And it makes kind of some sense because this crop report coming up and the U.S. trade negotiations next week might make it a little bit rougher waters for the soybean longs to play a big role in the market going into those two big fundamental features.
So they were building it ahead of time and thinking that both yield and weather were working against supply side, right?
Yes, correct. And everybody, I think it's generally thought in this marketplace that the demand narrative will be better understood and better known next week.
Well, what are your expectations when we get to that Thursday report?
You know, I'm getting more and more in the mindset that we can withstand negative news either from the crop report or from the U.S. trade negotiations because the supply side is getting tight enough. And what I mean by that is that the calculus that I think the Chinese are going to have to utilize is if you've got an issue with weather in the groundnut production in India, you've got an issue in Canada with the canola, you've got an issue with planting in Brazil for soybeans, and then you've got a harvest issue and yield issue in the United States, do you really want to test the limits of the U.S. side when it comes to soybeans if you really need that meal and need those beans to crush for your repopulation on your hog herd? So the tighter the supply gets in soy and other oil seeds to compete with it, it seems to me that maybe the Chinese will be less likely to want to come in and cancel recent soybean sales and use that as a bargaining chip slash, you know, to trade weapon to negotiate through this multi-varied area of trade negotiations that include foreign policy and security and internet and, you know, you name it. This U.S.-China trade negotiation issue is much more about trade just by itself.
And I suppose the vegetable oils all reach back to the Indonesian palm oil, which suffered a drought. That would have been August, September, October for their harvest season. So all related issues.
Excellent point.
All right. What do we know about livestock for the day?
Well, I think livestock for the day and for the week, we had our move up, but then we went back to spread trading. I've got to think that with these continued, I think we're up to 13 cases of African swine fever now in South Korea. I've got to think that the cash market in the United States and the supplies globally are going to converge at this point, because our carcass price is still well below $80 right now, and yet we may be looking at 20% less global pig supplies within 3 or 4 months. And so I think at some point in the not too distant future, these things have to converge. And I think cattle can go along for the ride because the supplies aren't as big. I'm near selling April cattle right now, getting close to that 120 level. That's been a target price. So be watching that next week.
Anything in the outside markets, the Dow, the dollar, either one?
Two things happened this week, both today that I thought, and one yesterday, I thought might give us some glimmer of hope for a dollar sell signal. We've been long waiting. Trade deficit numbers suggest the dollar should go lower. The unemployment numbers today suggest the Fed may not need to lower rates. And the Fed themselves, the Chicago Fed president, had a speech this week I took note of, and he talked kind of a little bit more about pushing back on more rate cuts when we don't really need it. Save the powder, in other words, save the ammunition for when we need it. So we might have a situation develop here where the dollar can go lower. I'm sure the U.S.-China trade negotiations will play a big role on that, and impeachment issues will continue to play a role. But at least we had a few things work in the general direction of a weakening dollar next week.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Hey, thank you. Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Friday afternoon. You can always hear him, all of our programming, in fact, online at willag.org, willag.org, anytime you'd like. And as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, any way you can listen to a podcast, you can find us. Even ask either Alexa or Google to play the Closing Market Report or Commodity Week. Well, this morning, the United States Department of Agriculture and the United States Environmental Protection Agency released the Trump administration's brand new negotiated agreement on the renewable fuels standard. Under the agreement, the following actions will be undertaken by EPA and USDA. In a forthcoming supplemental notice building off the recently proposed 2020 Renewable Volume Standards, or RVO, and the biomass-based diesel volume for 2021, EPA will propose and request public comment on expanding biofuel requirements beginning in 2020. EPA will seek comment on actions to ensure that more than 15 billion gallons of conventional ethanol be blended into the nation's fuel supply beginning in 2020, and that the volume obligation for biomass-based diesel is met. This will include accounting for relief expected to be provided for small refineries. EPA also intends to take final action on this front later this year. In the most recent compliance year, EPA granted 31 small refinery exemptions. Building on President Trump's earlier decision to allow year-round sales of E15, EPA will initiate a rulemaking process to streamline labeling and remove other barriers to the sale of E15, and EPA will continue to evaluate options for RIN market transparency and reform. USDA will seek opportunities through the budget process to consider infrastructure projects to facilitate higher biofuel blends that would probably include the E15, and the administration will continue to work to address ethanol and biodiesel trade issues. I talked with Rob Johansson, chief economist at USDA, about this morning's release.
Well, I think the main announcement is that EPA is going to put forward a supplemental rulemaking to look at the 2020 volumes and how it can include accounting for small refinery waivers in setting those volumes. That rule has to be finalized in November, so I expect that the supplemental will be moving pretty quickly. They didn't have timing on that. They said wait till I think next week to get more details on what that would include, and of course then that would go out for public comment. In addition, there was a discussion this morning about building on the E15 rule to include additional streamlining of labels and removing other barriers for the sale of E15, so try and increase sales of E15. EPA is going to continue to look at RIN market transparency and reform options. Some of those were included in the last E15 rule but not finalized, so I expect they may be looking at those more closely. And then USDA will be looking at potential programs to also support projects that facilitate the sales of higher level blends of E15 and E85. Essentially, that's, I think, was in the announcement this morning, and I imagine there'll be still a lot of questions that are probably going to be answered in the more detailed stuff that comes out next week.
So this runs through what, 2022?
The rule, the RFS has mandated volumes through 2022, and then after that they continue on 2023 and onward based on another rulemaking that EPA will have to do sometime in 2021 that will sort of set the stage for how the program operates after 2022.
Do you see this as a win for ethanol and agriculture?
I think it was certainly a long negotiation, and I think most biofuel groups will and farm groups will see this as a positive. I think there are still details that need to be hashed out, but I think it will be viewed as a win.
Does it recover all of the SREs that were posted since 2016?
This is for projected going forward, so it will not be accounting for the in the rulemakings, it requires EPA to look at projected volumes of SRE waivers. Those will be informed by the last 3 years of waivers, but it's not accurate, I don't think, again, based on more details forthcoming next week, on explicitly accounting for those waivers that were provided over the last couple of years and building those into future volumetric obligations.
That was Rob Johansson. I spoke to him earlier today. He's the chief economist at the United States Department of Agriculture. The assessment of Scott Irwin from the University of Illinois is that we'll need to wait just a bit to see the details of the RFS agreement from the Trump administration. However, the reaction in the RIN market was muted, and he believes that suggests the oil industry is not particularly upset about the agreement. It's yet to be seen why that might be the case. On this Friday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agribal and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hey, good afternoon to you, Eric.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Fall's arrived. It's cold and wet, but I think the guys up north have known that for a while. Can you tell me about this recent pattern we've been in?
Well, if someone's listening and they've spent the last couple of weeks in central Illinois, you know, and not been watching the weather very much, you know, we wouldn't know how cool things had been. And just a little bit to our north and west, because we've been tucked away into this subtropical ridge that's been sitting over parts of the southeastern United States. And because of that, much of the activity has been to our west and north in terms of precipitation and cooler weather. And they've not been accumulating much heat at all, while, you know, right here in central Illinois, we had days in the 90s this past week. So it's been a split situation. And the good thing is that pattern is changing, but it's changing in a way that's going to be quite active. In other words, it's not just going to go over to some benign, boring flow pattern. You know, the ridge is breaking down over the southeast in the near term. They're going to get some rain. And by the way, there are some places in the mid-south, so Tennessee, Kentucky, then getting over to Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, that have not seen rain in 40 days. And they're going to finally get some rain in there. But that changeover in the pattern does mean some changes for us as well. So there's a lot of exciting weather coming up in the near term.
What do we see for this weekend for us?
Well, there's a low-pressure system that's getting going in the northwest right now. And the good news about that one is that its trajectory is still going to stay closer to the U.S.-Canadian border rather than dipping down into the central plains. And so with storm systems that run like that, we tend to stay, of course, on the warmer side of them, but we will have to be dealing with some rain. It'll move into the Midwest on Saturday and sweep through us Saturday night into Sunday is what the current trajectory is of this. And it'll be a rain event, pretty widely scattered. It's not going to be a heavy precipitation producer, at least as forecast right now. But it's what follows that that's got me quite concerned. And so what we're paying close attention to is sweeping out of like British Columbia midweek next week. A trough dives down to the northwest and then it continues to dig. In other words, it keeps going farther south. And as it does that, by the time we get to, well, our phone call next Friday, we're going to be seeing something a little bit different. We're going to have to watch next Thursday and Friday for this low pressure system to get cranking in the mid part of the country. Now, there was a lot of model disagreement about this one, but things have been coming together today on Friday, and we've started to see that potential for a low pressure system in the midsection of the country, such that not only be very windy and very wet out ahead of it, but on the backside, we might be talking about some high plains snow. And of course, as it finally exits the Great Lakes states, we will get into a frost situation that could possibly come through the Dakotas, Nebraska, Minnesota, and it looks like Iowa as well. Don't see those frost coming all the way through central Illinois by next Friday, Saturday morning. But the potential is there for a pretty significant cool down behind the system. But a frost next Friday would be actually right on time for us. So that's not too far away. But given the late planted crop, it's a pretty serious situation.
So are we talking about a killing type freeze where we're 28 for a while?
It could be for parts of the northern plains and parts even of Iowa and Minnesota. Some of the latest model runs right now do bring temperatures down into the upper 20s for a brief while. What will really make that happen is if they can clear out fast and let the winds calm down. If it stays windy and cloudy, the chances of this happening where there's a killing freeze is pretty low. So we'll have to watch all next week to see what kind of weather we get behind this system. That will be critical for those folks.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what the bigger picture looks like. I know the westerlies drive us sometimes. Is there anything out in the Pacific that we need to be looking at?
Yeah, we're kind of all getting fooled right now thinking that the Pacific Ocean's behaving like an El Nino, but it turns out what's going on is that the Indian Ocean is really driving much of our climate dynamics right now. What I mean by that is over the Indian Ocean, there's very cool water that is north of Australia and Indonesia. And over by Africa, on the other side of the Indian Ocean, it's quite warm. This is the positive phase of something called the Indian Ocean Dipole. Now, what's the significance of all that? Well, that's driving the strong wind out of the east across the Indian Ocean, and therefore there's a strong westerly wind in the central Pacific. And the reason to discuss all of this is because as long as that pattern hangs on and it's forecast to stick around for a while, we might continue to get the wash, rinse, repeat of what we've seen here in the United States. It is also affecting something called the Majulian Oscillation, and that's impacting South America's weather right now too. So you want to blame somebody on the weather we've been experiencing? I think a lot of it is coming out of the Indian Ocean right now, which is kind of crazy to talk about.
So what does it mean for South America?
Well, you know, they've had this drought that's been in place. It's been both in Brazil's major growing areas and as well as Argentina's. And as a result of that, they've been waiting for the monsoon to get going and to bring in some much needed precipitation. While I do see, you know, rains, you know, they've had it recently. They still need more to get going. But the rains are primarily in the northern and western side of Brazil. So the eastern side. So think Goiás, Bahia, the Tocantins, that area, not getting much rain at all in the near term. Southern Brazil, Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, we're going to be seeing a bit more precipitation on there, but Argentina is quite dry right now as well. I think the big difference for Brazil versus the United States is that they can spread their planting out over such a long time period that these intermittent issues at the beginning may not translate into problems. What we really need to watch out for is any signals coming up in January and February about dryness, because that could really do in first crop soybeans and any first crop corn that they plant.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joins us on the closing market report for this Friday afternoon. Up next, the beginning of our Commodity Week program. You can hear that online in its entirety anytime you'd like. It's up there right now at willag.org. This is the October 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, WILLAG.ORG. Our panelists for the day include Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana, and Garrett Toy of First Choice Commodities out of Stockton, Illinois. Garrett, I'd like to start with you first. You've been a while since we've had you on the program. Why don't you remind folks where you are and what you do?
Sure. It's Garrett Toy, First Choice Commodities and Ag Trader Talk. We're located up here in the northwest corner of the state in Stockton, Illinois. We work with commercial grain elevators and producers basically across the Corn Belt.
Well, tell me about your area first, because I'm interested to know what conditions look like.
Well, we're about 45 minutes east of Dubuque, so we're over on the not far from the Mississippi River. We've been the garden spot for most of the, we had the wet spring as everybody did, and then we were kind of fortunate when everything turned off dry. We had consistent rains, and we were what I considered the garden spot for most of the year, and then the rains started again, and you know, locally around here, we've had some people that have dumped, you know, 20, 25 inches of rain out of the rain gauge in the month of September. We just knocked another 4 inches out this week. Not a wheel is turned around here. You know, talking to a lot of producers locally, as each day goes on, a lot more despair and frustrations growing. You know, we want to be in the field. You know, we've got some decent looking beans. They're short like everything. But we've got some beans that were probably early beans that were ready probably about 2 weeks ago that, you know, if it keeps going the way it's going, we're going to have some issues. So that's the first foremost, concerns that we have around here.
Garrett Toy is with First Choice Commodities out of Stockton, Illinois, joined us on our Commodity Week program, which you can hear online right now in its entirety, if you'd like, at willag.org, WILLAG.ORG. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between each and every business day of the year. Again, that address is willag.org. If you prefer to listen to us as a podcast, you can look us up in iTunes, the Google Play Store, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, even Spotify. One of my favorite ways, of course, is by using the NPR One app. However you listen to the programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media, thank you so very much for taking your time to spend with us each and every business day of the year. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.